Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I was sitting in my chair laughing because I was on the treadmill this week, and I've got a pretty extensive song selection in my mini iPod, and on came the beautiful voice of Whitney Houston singing The Greatest Love of All. Tom and I never talk about the music beforehand. He picks what he wants, whatever. And this morning I went, rats, I should have emailed Tom and see if he knows The Greatest Love of All. Showed up this morning, and that was totally unplanned, whatever. So, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, yeah. Can you say serendipity? Okay, anyway. This morning we move on to week two of our four-week series on the basic principles of the science of mind, the teaching based on the ideas of Dr. Ernest Holmes that he first started writing about in the early 1900s, around 1917, 1920. And I want to clarify a few things about this teaching for some of the newer people. For one thing, sometimes the question comes up when you hear this stuff and you start to get interested and you bring it up to some of your friends, which I don't, be careful who you bring it up to anyway. You know, they'll go, well, religious science, is that like Scientology or Christian science? Anybody ever heard that? Okay, you know. And the answer is no. Not quite or sort of kind of, no, all right? Dr. Holmes chose the name religious science because the ideas that he was writing about, which are present in virtually every major religion, these ideas combine the clarity and the intelligence of science with what we might call the inner wisdom and the awareness of spirituality. This is also not some special revelation made just to one person. Dr. Holmes never claimed to be channeling anyone. He never claimed to be a prophet or a guru or even an enlightened person of some kind. Instead, he meant for this teaching to be an accumulation of all the mental and spiritual knowledge that has been collected, examined, and argued about ever since men and women began wondering why we are here and what it is we're supposed to be doing while we are here so that we can get to where we're all going. Okay, ever since that happened. And finally, I want to point out that this teaching is by no means the one and only way to spiritual fulfillment. It is not. But I can tell you very honestly that it's the best way that I have found. And whatever your spiritual background or your current spiritual belief, we have people who come to this service on Sunday who go to Catholic Mass Saturday night. They do both. They combine it. I talked to somebody this morning, Methodist and this. We have people that combine this with their own beliefs. Whatever your beliefs are, if you can get a good handle on just these few basic ideas that we're covering in these four talks this month, there is a possibility that you may find out the same thing that I found out over 30 years ago, and that is, as a spiritual practice and a life practice, this stuff works. This stuff works. Now, last week, I talked about the idea, a little bit of review here, that this thing that we call God, this creative power, what Dr. Holmes calls the thing itself, is a power that completely supports all of its creation equally without exception, all right? It's not someone or something that exists in a place called heaven outside of our physical human experience. It's not present more in one place than it is at any other place, and it doesn't give more of what it has to any one person than it does to anyone else. This power is completely present in every one of us all the time, ready to create something newer and greater in our experience than whatever existed before. In fact, that's the only thing this power does. It creates. What does it create? That's easy. It creates life. It creates life. It creates everything in the universe, and it creates all the infinite relationships that can possibly exist between all those things. And how does it create? Well, that's easy too. As a perfect intelligence, it creates the only way it can create, which is by using its intelligence to turn thought into form. to turn ideas into things and experiences. Now, the reason this is important for us to understand is because you and I are the way this creative process works in our life. We are the way it does what it does. In other words, in our life, all right, we are the way that this works, and that's what we're going to talk about this morning. Now, I will admit right up front that this idea of God that is working through us and as us, like I talked about last week, seems for some strange reason to be a very difficult idea for much of the world to accept. However, the reason that it's so difficult for a lot of people to accept is not because they don't want it to be true. In fact, most people, if you ask them, would love to believe that God was their guardian angel, their sugar daddy, and all-around good buddy. A lot of people like that, okay? Always available and ready to give you whatever you want, do whatever you want it to do. They'd like to believe it, but they just can't for a number of reasons. For one thing, they can't believe it because early in their life, they bought into the false belief that they are separated from God. That they're separated from God. That's a term we call duality, okay? God up there, us down here. God talks, we listen. God commands, we obey. Sounds like that old-time religion we grew up in, doesn't it? Duality is the spiritually debilitating idea that we can actually be separated from the one and only real source of love and joy and peace and prosperity and freedom and perfect healing that there is. Duality is the belief that God is perfect, but we are flawed. And unfortunately, our belief in duality as a race is probably the basic cause, either directly or indirectly, of more suffering than any other theological concept throughout history, which is why we need to understand it, get past it, so we can heal. You see, if it were true that we live and move and have our being separate from God, and it isn't, there's no doubt that this would be a very, very different world. I mean, if God or some intelligence, whatever name we want to call it, was not present and active in the world all the time in some very real way, expressing itself through you, through me, through all of these things around us as love and success and family and creativity, as the fulfillment of all of our dreams and all of our desires, if that intelligence wasn't there, there wouldn't be any point in us being here either. I mean, why would God need a middleman? Okay? We need to recognize that both creation and evolution, and by evolution I don't mean the ongoing argument, the Snopes trial and all that between the scientists and the fundamentalists, I mean the constant growth and constant unfolding and expanding of life, which is what evolution really means, in every way, okay, in through science, through technology, through society, through all those ways, creation and evolution, these two things do not happen to us. They happen through us. They happen by means of us. We create, as Ursula was talking about. We evolve, okay? So that must logically mean that we are the creative power of God at work in the world. We can see it happening. We can see it working all around us. You see, this thing that we call life, what we call the world or the universe or whatever you want to call it, and everything that happens in it is nothing more or less than people thinking and making decisions. It really, really is, okay? And creating experiences and relationships out of those decisions. Even nature, people say, well, people aren't involved in nature. Well, even nature functions intelligently. Look at the earth, look at the oceans, the weather, the plants, the animals, all of them function intelligently. You see, the world as we know it, we think it's just a place, sort of a stage set that we all live in, but the world is not a place as much as it is an ongoing process. It's an ongoing creative process. It is consciousness unfolding. It's a state of mind. It is an invisible mental and spiritual construct, okay, being played out in physical form. And our world changes, our relationship to our world changes as our beliefs change. So our beliefs determine our thoughts, Our thoughts determine our actions, and our actions create our experiences, for better or for worse. For example, economic slowdowns, like the one we're kind of coming out of now in fits and starts, sputtering around the world, they don't happen because all of a sudden there isn't enough money. They happen because money stops flowing freely. It stops flowing because that's what happens when people become afraid, when people begin to believe more in lack and limitation than they do in prosperity and abundance. In a similar way, wars, or all the stuff that happened in Paris this week. I'm sure we've all been kind of mesmerized by the horrible things that happened there. These things happen when one group of people starts believing that violence can actually be an effective way to create peace or to get the way they want. That's why these things happen. Wars happen, terrorism happens, when we start to believe that we can actually shoot or bomb our way to cooperation and understanding. I mean, how crazy is that? If you think about it, okay? In both cases, and there are many more, but let's look at these two, the resulting disruption and devastation comes about because of a collective belief that is not in harmony with a universal intelligence that knows and is offering us something better. A power that, even when we're disrupting it, is offering us prosperity instead of poverty. It's offering us peace instead of violence. And it's the same with racism, sexism, homophobia, addiction, illiteracy, disease, child abuse, and every other social problem that shows up on the world stage. Same process. So it should be no surprise to us that this same process works on an individual level. In fact, that's where it starts. It starts with us as individuals. When we believe that we are separated from God, or separated from our good, which is really the same thing, we get scared. We do. And that fear comes out as stress. It comes out as confusion. We may even become desperate. And then we start feeling helpless and powerless. And because it's hard to make intelligent decisions when we're in that frame of mind, that's when we start to make bad decisions. Right? That's when we start to make bad decisions. We begin to act unintelligently, even though we are completely immersed in a perfect intelligence. That's what we do. Now, when we think and act this way, either individually or as a race, the logical result of our confused thinking shows up as a problem that we then have to solve. Okay? Which, as difficult as it might be when we're dealing with it, seems to most people to be perfectly normal. We may not like it, terrorism, poverty, genocide, all these things, but we accept it, okay? Because in our past experience, the old way of thinking that created it, it's always been that way. That's why the world accepts it. Someday, and that's what teachings like this are designed to help us grow, someday we're going to have to recognize that what we call society, which is simply the collective beliefs of everyone on this planet, the collective experiences, society can never be better than our collective beliefs. It can never be any better than the sum total of all the thinking that has been going on up until now. I mean, it was Einstein who said, great quote, most of you have heard it, he said, "The problems we are facing cannot be solved at the level of thinking we were at when we created them." Now apply that to the stuff you see on the internet and in the news every day. It's absolutely true. If we want society, if we want the world to improve, or if we want it to heal, we need to think better so we can act better so we can create better. You see, our problems never come from out there. We think they do, but they don't. An intelligent, workable, spiritually grounded, lasting solution to any problem, large or small, collective or individual, can only appear when we get to the realization that we are never separated from our greater good. And we can't be. We can't be separated from this power because we are the way it works. We are the way it works. Now, another reason that many people find it so difficult to accept the part that they play in creating their own experience is because even though they believe very much in a God who is good and powerful and loving and intelligent and all that, they don't believe in themselves. They don't believe in themselves or in the rightness or the legitimacy, if you want to say it, of the desires that fill their mind night and day. A lot of people in the world don't believe that they have the right to tell this magnificent, generous, omnipresent power what they want. They don't think they can. They don't believe that they deserve to have the things they desire, so they can't conceive that God would want them to have those things either. Now, once again, it's perfectly understandable why we feel this way. Many of us were taught from a very early age that desiring something was selfish. I heard that. Anybody else? Maybe a couple of you? Okay. We were told, I was told, if God wants to give us something, then that's fine, but we should never presume that we deserve it. Don't presume. That's part of that old life is suffering and I'm just a poor sinner mentality, okay, which is nothing more than spiritual nonsense. And if you still find yourself feeling that way, even on occasion, sweetheart, you need to get over it, okay? We all need to get over it, all right? Now, just as surely as we need to know that God is a loving intelligence, and I say it that way very differently, very deliberately. I'm not saying God is intelligent. God is intelligence itself, the noun, not the adjective, okay? Just as surely as we need to know that this intelligence is always with us and supports us completely, which is what I talked about last week, we also need to know that we deserve everything that God could possibly offer us, which is actually quite a lot if you think about it. In fact, we deserve to enjoy, a lot of people, this is a big surprise, we deserve to enjoy every bit of our time here. Every bit of our time here. That's why we need to start thinking of ourselves as a perfect expression of God's infinite and unquenchable desire to create a world that is loving and prosperous and peaceful, and exciting and creative and just plain fun. We are here to make that happen. God's not going to wave his or her or its hand over and make everything all nice and peaceful. All right? That's not the way it works. He, she, or it is not going to come down in a cloud and straighten everything out. Okay? We are here to make it happen. And if we can't believe that about ourselves, we need to at least teach it to the children. That's what Ursula and Kathy and our youth volunteers are doing in the youth program in the dining room right around the hall. They have a lot of fun every week. It's great. We had 19 kids in there last week. Pretty amazing, all right? You know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I wish I had heard this message when I was 4 or 5 years old, you know? It would have saved me a whole lot of trouble over the last 60 years or so. But then again, I would not have gotten the benefit of all that experience, okay, which got me where I am. I like what Mark Twain once said. He said, good decisions come from experience, and experience comes from bad decisions. All right? It's good. You know, it's one thing to believe in a higher power in whatever way, shape, or form that takes for us. That's important, okay? Something not above us, but greater than us, okay? But to live our life in the way that we truly want to live it, we also have to believe something else. We have to believe that we all have within us, because once again, we are all perfect ideas in the mind of God. That's a great affirmation to spout at yourself through the day when you're in traffic or work or anywhere else. We have to believe that we all have within us all the power we need to create whatever we choose to create. You see, you are the only thinker in your life. You are the only decision maker in your life, and I'm the only decision maker in mine. Our thoughts, and Ursula talked about this great with her electricity analogy this morning, our thoughts, powered by our heart, which is our emotions, are what create every experience that we have ever had or will have. Not only that, our ability to create cannot be limited by anyone else's opinion, criticism, or opposition unless we allow it, We make the choices. Nobody else can do it for us. Nobody else is supposed to do it for us. Because we are the only ones who know, if we pay attention, what our desires really, really are and what we are willing to do to make those desires come true. By consciously and deliberately focusing our creative energy, which once again is our heart and our mind, and our conscious intention, very important, that is what causes this power to do for us what it's always doing in the world, which is creating all things new. So, let me tell you something that I believe, having been in this for 30-some years. I believe if there is anything in your life that you want, okay, anything that you really, really want, something that you believe will put a song in your heart, a twinkle in your eye, and a spring in your step, okay, there is a way for you to get it or to accomplish it. There is. I mean, there has to be. And how do I know this? Because your desire for that thing had to come from someplace. It had to come from someplace. And the only place it could ever come from is from the source of all good. That's where our desires come from. So if that desire that we have comes from a perfect intelligence that constantly supports a greater expression of life for you, for me, for everyone else, and if that power is what we are made of, okay, then something in us must know a way to make it come true. I mean, doesn't it make perfect sense? If you think about it, it certainly does to me. I mean, why would else would a perfect intelligence give us a desire if there wasn't a way to make it happen? But if we don't believe that this power is completely here, right where we are, or if we don't recognize the things that life is offering to us, the possibilities, the opportunities, just recognizing and accepting that we have a desire is not going to do us any good. We have to know that there's a way for us to consciously use this power and that we are meant to discover what that way is. That's why we need to understand that we are the way it works. In the book, The Science of Mind, that I'm going over in the introduction, in this section, Dr. Holmes writes this. He says, "This thing works for us by working through us and as us always. It cannot work for us in any other way." And then he says this. I love it. He says, "It spreads itself over the whole universe and shouts at us from every angle, but it can only become to us, it can only become power to us when we recognize it as power." Let me read that last part again. "It spreads itself over the whole universe," that's everywhere, "and shouts at us, shows itself from every single angle, but it can only become power to us when we recognize it as power." This is the key. This is the key to our being able to use this power in a productive and efficient and scientific way. And when I say scientific, I mean a way that is predictable, explainable, and repeatable. That's all scientific means. Because it doesn't matter how great our idea of God is if we don't have a great enough belief in ourselves to go along with it. And that belief is much easier to achieve when we stop and we look around us and see how this power shows what it can do. Now, the good news is we don't have to accept all this stuff on faith alone. You don't have to take my word for it, Dr. Holmes, David's, or anybody else's. There are all sorts of excellent examples in nature. I mean, a couple, you can think about the soil that a farmer uses, okay? It's not creative because it belongs to a certain person. Soil acts intelligently on whatever seed is put into it, on whoever puts it there, because that's what dirt does, right? That's what it does. But it doesn't do anything. The intelligence is still there, but it doesn't do anything until a seed arrives, whether somebody puts it there or whether a random, maybe negative seed blows in on the wind. Or think about the atmosphere. One more great example. You know, the air we breathe that is this super thin layer on this big, beautiful blue ball that ain't really big when you realize compared to the enormity of space moving thousands of miles per hour, and here we are with this layer of oxygen that's available to anyone who wants to breathe. To anyone who wants to breathe. Now, if we personally choose not to breathe, even if it's to make someone else unhappy or to serve them right, you know, a lesson, okay, we will suffocate. We will suffocate. Now, that doesn't mean the air isn't there for us. It simply means that we are capable of making a conscious but not very smart decision not to use the air to do what it is its nature to do. It's always there. We have the choice to use it or not. Now, these are physical examples in the world, and we could use a lot more. But in the same way, on a spiritual level, God's good, which some people have trouble with, but I just think about it as a term used to describe the basic essence of all of life, all the things being offered to us, is available to us all the time, but each of us has to claim it in order to get it. We have to claim it in order to get it, okay? Now, we don't have to do anything to attract it. We don't have to make our own thoughts be creative. They already are, once again, whether you like it or not, so watch your thoughts, okay? And we don't have to beg this power to be creative on our behalf. That has all been taken care of long before we were born. All we have to do is allow this power to flow through us without letting our own individual stuff get in the way. Now, let me tell you a story, or it's more of a, some of you have heard this before. I use it periodically because I like it so much. It's sort of an observation I made sitting on my back deck one evening, a number of years ago. We had been having sort of a drought, so I had put a sprinkler out in my backyard, and I was having a little sip of wine, sitting on the deck, watching the sprinkler sprinkle. Okay, that's always nice to do in the evening, okay? And it was an old yard sprinkler I hadn't pulled out in a while, and I put it out there, and you know, one of those swinging arc things that goes like that, okay, back and forth. And I realized that the spray was very uneven, okay? It wasn't just symmetrical like it's supposed to be. Some of the little pinholes were letting a lot of water through, and it was shooting like 20, 30 feet, okay? Some of them were letting just a little bit through, 5, 10 feet, and some of them weren't letting anything through at all. They were completely blocked. But the water pressure was fine. Where the hose went in, the water pressure was fine, okay? Not only that, the water pressure was exactly the same behind every one of the little holes, whether they were open or whether they were blocked. You see where I'm going here? Okay. Now, if you think about it, that's an analogy for the way we live. God is the water pressure, life is the sprinkler, and we are the holes, okay? All right? And our thoughts and our beliefs either open up the hole or they block the hole. Or another way of saying it is our belief determines how much power comes through in our life. You see, because our good is always available to us, like the water pressure, in an unlimited mental and spiritual flow of ideas and energy and intelligence and creativity, the only way it can be limited in our life is if we block that flow with mental and spiritual obstructions. And we all know what those are. Let me name a few. Fear, anger, resentment, shame, big one, confusion, ignorance, arrogance, stupidity, okay? Those kinds of limiting ideas restrict the divine flow in our experience, so it doesn't work for us nearly as well as it could. You see, our attitude does not limit God because nothing can limit this power. Nothing can limit God. It just limits the amount of good that we personally are able to accept at any given time. On the other hand, if we recognize that we are the only outlet for that good in our life, and if we open up all of the little sprinkler holes, all the channels of faith and love and belief and understanding, if we just open up the holes, the flow can't help but increase, okay? It can't help but increase, whether that increase comes in the form of love or money or health or success or anything else. Now, the sad fact of the matter is, many of us started closing off our connection with our source soon after we were born. In fact, there are some people who have been so completely closed for so long that they don't even remember what it feels like to be open, to live their life in an open, natural, joyful way. For these people, and you know them as well as I do, nobody here, I'm sure, but we all know people, okay? For these people, everything is a struggle. Now, we all feel that way sometimes. It's part of the human condition, okay? When nothing seems to be working, nothing seems to be coming through. But the good thing is, with this awareness, we can always change our experience simply by opening up and letting this ever-present source of supply do what it does, which is to flow through us unrestricted. Now, you may ask, what's the best way to do this? Good question. Well, for one thing, we can stop being so afraid all of the time. Okay, that's something easy to say, but hard to do. And even if we try to not be afraid, it's probably not going to happen immediately. But we can practice. We can start practicing anytime we want, and there's no time like the present, believe me. We can also stop being so angry, resentful, and irritated so much of the time. Okay? We can start deliberately being kind. We can start giving freely to the world, sharing our time, our money, our energy, our authenticity, without worrying about not having enough. Okay? I mean, it's time we accepted the truth about ourselves, that we are not poor, helpless beings stuck in whatever unpredictable, difficult situation that the world throws at us. We are not. We are co-creators with God of our experience. We are co-creators with this power of our every experience. And if you haven't heard that before, I suggest you start thinking about that way, thinking about yourself that way. And if you have heard me say it before, several of you have, no doubt, I want you to remind yourself of it all the time. Because it really is the truth. It's the truth about God. It's the truth about the world. It's the truth about you and the truth about me. And next week, we are going to look at what this power, this incredibly supportive power that works through us, what it actually does. And I invite you to be here because this is the truth in your life and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a moment. Take a deep breath. Roll your shoulders a little. Relax. I threw out a lot of stuff. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's know this. Take these words for yourself. I belong here. Right here in the middle of life, in the middle of the world, in the middle of this incredible experience, I belong here. And I belong here because I am the perfect expression of the power that created it all out of itself, including me. So I recognize that because I am here, everything in life is available to me. So I realize that I am meant to be prosperous. I am meant to be happy. I am meant to be healthy. And I am meant to give and receive love in boundless measure. That is my natural state. In all things, great and small, I bring the best of myself because I bring the God that is within me. I show up at work creatively, helping others, not judging, giving the best of myself. I show up physically, taking care of my physical body, treating myself well, not abusing my body, not criticizing my body, not judging it, accepting it, loving it, and caring for it. And I show up in my relationships. With my neighbors, I'm kind, accepting, and non-judging. With my friends, I am supportive and giving. With those I love, I am everything I can be. I give of myself selflessly to my spouse, my partner, my parents, my children, my family, and to all those who deserve my love, which is truly everyone. So as I do this, not only do I act in a better way by making better decisions, I create a better image of me. I bring my best self forward wherever I am, whether it's in school or at work or at home. And I allow myself to express this infinite loving power in every way that occurs to me. So knowing this, I do not let the negative ideas of the world get in my way. I realize these are false ideas that deserve no strength or recognition. I do not allow vexatious people to change my attitude. I do not allow the appearance of violence and hate, whether it comes from people who believe in religion or politics or anything else, I do not allow that to obstruct my view of a world that is made with love. So I bring that love to the world. I open my heart and let it out, and I receive it multiplied abundantly. Knowing this, I accept these ideas as the truth for me and every other person, and I accept this completely without reservation, knowing that my consciousness has changed my life in this moment. Thank you, God, and so it is.